You really want to be better with your finances. You try to put money away in savings. You look for deals. You wrote out a budget once a long time ago. You still overdraft from time to time and you still have debt. The truth is managing money is not easy, but Rocket Money can help. Rocket Money shows you exactly what you're spending every month. From there, the app helps you make a budget that meets your financial goals. The app even gives you real-time alerts when you're about to go over your budget so you don't spend too much. With Rocket Money, you can also see all your subscriptions at a glance and cancel the ones you don't want right from the app. Rocket Money can even try to get you a refund for some of the money wasted. Plus, you can use the Smart Savings feature to start putting more money away. Rocket Money analyzes your accounts to determine the optimal time to stow away cash without going over your budget. Our members report that the Rocket Money app saved more than $700 a year. Getting better with money doesn't have to be a pipe dream. Rocket Money can make it a reality. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel or download the app from the Apple App or Google Play Stores.
Welcome. You're tuned into the best in paranormal talk radio. This is Beyond the Darkness. I'm your host, Dave Schrader, along with me, Tim Dennis. Hello, Tim.
Hello.
You know what I like about this show, Tim, is the wide variety of people we get to talk to.
Absolutely.
Every walk of life, we've had the chance to talk to neurosurgeons. We've had a chance to talk with house moms and dads. We've talked to firemen, policemen, lawyers. We've even talked, Tim, to some of the biggest celebrities in the world on the show.
Mm-hmm.
Well, at least in their minds, they're the biggest celebrities in the world. But they still come on our show. Either way, we win. And today we've got a guest that's going to join us. This is pretty cool. I've been excited about having him join us on the show. Fans of David Race have come to love his smart, sharp, and unique stand-up comedy. On stage, he reduces the story of his adoption, finding out as an adult he's half Latino, and his daily interactions with people down to biting and strongly executed jokes. David's performed in several stand-up comedy festivals and appeared regularly at the world-famous Hollywood Improv in Los Angeles. And he's appeared on the Howard Stern Show, Jimmy Kimmel Live, SiriusXM Radio's Raw Dog Comedy Channel. And he was the creator and host of the popular online show Celebrity Eulogy and the hit podcast Comedians Talking About Bigfoot, which became a TV pilot. He is currently the creator and host of the podcast Monstrosity with David Race. He's here with us today. David, thank you so much for joining us.
How you doing?
I'm doing well. Doing well. Thank you for slumming and taking time to spend a little time on our show, sharing your story. I appreciate that. I love that there are so many people in the comedy field that seem to have an interest in the strange and the supernatural, cryptids. We've talked to quite a few on and off air, and you know, why do you think that they seem to be so open to it? I get one of two things. They're super open to it or completely skeptical of it. There doesn't seem to be any mid ground. Do you find that same thing?
Yeah, I would say it's pretty close to the wider population, kind of secret dark corner conversations at comedy clubs. You know, some comedian will come up to me in a back corner and go, "I'm really into that stuff too, by the way. You ever see a ghost? I've seen some crazy things." You know, there's some guy in the back corner who was hilarious on stage a few minutes ago who wouldn't dare tell his agent or his manager or the other comics these ghost stories, but he's got me cordoned off behind a velvet rope, you know, and I'm hearing the details of some sea monster he battled.
The different stories you've got too, and here you're launching these shows, which one has led to a TV show. That's pretty impressive as well. Tell us a little bit about your background story though. What got you interested in the strange and the supernatural?
Well, as a kid, and I hear this all the time, by the way, from people in my age group, I started watching In Search of Leonard Nimoy, the original show, not the new version. And that was one of my favorite shows as a kid. I loved it. I used to watch it after school. They had reruns running for years. So that got me caught up in those topics. And but I didn't really study them much beyond that show. And then I'd say I got really into it after I had what I'm convinced was a Bigfoot incident upstate New York near Whitehall. same county, Whitehall's in Washington County, New York, and my family owned a property in Cambridge, New York, which is in the same county, about 40 minutes from Whitehall, in the same string of mountains and everything. And in 2007, I think it was, I was up there in the fall of 2007 at my family's vacation home. Again, my family, meaning my father and his wife, you know, own this home. And I was up there just for the weekend when something banged on the wall in the middle of the night. And we were, this house was deep in the woods. This house was on a 55-acre property, you know, deep in the woods, high up a mountain, no neighbors for a mile in any direction. And the neighbors that were a mile away were down, you know, 1,500 feet on the ground. We were up in the middle of the woods, deep on a, you know, high up on a mountain. So in the center of the woods is this house. And at 3:30, 4 o'clock in the morning, it was a log cabin, sturdy log cabin type of house. Something banged on the wall. I'm talking about banged on the wall like a freight train hit the wall. I'm talking about a meteor 20 feet large hit the wall. That's how hard this thing hit the wall.
Jeez.
And it hit the, wall at, I'd say, the 10-foot height, somewhere in that range, based on where the sound came from. It was right next to my head where I was sleeping. So it was a little above my head next to a screen window. And it just, boom, smashed the wall. And it, you know, startled my wife and I out of our sleep. And, you know, in the pitch dark of the woods with the crickets and this thing hitting the wall, you know, you jumped. But for whatever reason, I did not open the screen and look out the window, even though this happened right next to the window, whatever it was. I guess God was protecting me from seeing what was what I believe was standing there. Because if I had opened that screen and I was face to face with what I know was standing there, I'd still be unconscious right now in that room.
Now you say what you know was standing there. How do you have this knowing?
I'll tell you. Yeah, I was going to get to that. You asked me how I got into this, and this story that I'm telling you led to me reporting it to the BFRO, and they investigated the hell out of it. I was on the phone with them probably for 3.5 hours over 2 different phone calls. And they really put me through the ringer with the questions and looking for inconsistencies in my statements. And, you know, they asked me all kinds of interesting questions. In fact, a little graphic, but one of the questions they asked me was my wife menstruating? And the answer is she was. And it was just a really weird question for them to ask, but they asked for a reason. Was I next to an open screen window? Yes. Was she menstruating? Yes. And that became part of their evidence packet that there was a male Bigfoot that was onto that scent.
Wow. Now that's something a little bit different. I don't know. Have we, and I guess I haven't heard that crossed many times. You know, it's been a theory on the fringe, but that they actually looked into that aspect of it. Did that surprise you that might have been what drew the attention of the Bigfoot?
Well, at the time, yeah, I would say so. You know, in the last week or so with all this Bigfoot erotica, it doesn't seem so surprising.
Right.
it did surprise me. It was kind of creepy and weird, but I didn't know where they were going. They first asked the two questions that led to that outcome, but that was definitely part of their line of thinking. And I just thought it was a fascinating thing that they went down that road and they happened to be right. I actually had to stop and think, was she? And I went to her and asked her, and she looked at her calendar and she was.
That's pretty crazy. So what did you do? I mean, going forward, are you sleeping with the window shut on heavy flow nights?
We were there for 2 nights. I don't recall it. That might have been the second night. I honestly don't recall, but if it was the second night, and I probably think it was, thank God we were gone the next night. Next morning, you know, there was no right. Next night. If it was the first night, I don't know how we made it through the second night. I probably took a lot of Ambien. But you know, that location, the Whitehall area, is obviously well known in Bigfoot lore, and I only learned that after the incident. After that incident, which was so strange, and I reported to the BFRO, after that incident, that's when I kind of really learned about that area and discovered, wait a minute, that house is sitting in the middle of a Bigfoot belt, you know, and I became fascinated by where my father's property was, and that there's just kind of no doubt with it. Let's put it this way. To ask my father, who's an ex-cop, you know, and has a New York cop kind of personality, he'd be cynical about it. And his his response was, oh, David, come on, it was a deer or something. If that were a deer, the deer would still be laying feet up, you know, having run straight into a wall at the,
right.
at the I don't know the word I want, you know, that the pressure of a train hitting a wall, the deer would still be dead right now with his feet up, you know, with stars spinning around his head. I mean, that nothing, and how did he run into a wall at the 10-foot height? And why did he run straight into a wall? Is he blind? What's the reason he ran straight into a wall? That
obviously, day? It was one of Santa's reindeer drunk and flying when he shouldn't have been.
Right. I mean, there's just no scenario. There's nothing you can come up with that would explain what this was. It's you have to picture, you know, you're up in the mountains, in the middle of the woods, on a 55-acre private property that's gated off from the road. No one is ever up there. No one walks up there. No one would be up there. 3:30, 4 o'clock in the morning. Bam. At the 10-foot height of a log cabin, the bam is enough that would shatter a human's arms into dust. No human could have hit a wall this hard. No way. Their arm would have just become powder on the spot. And that's it. They're gone. And you know, later on, after that incident, I become fascinated about what just happened, and I study the area. I discover I'm in the center of a Bigfoot area.
Now, how did your wife respond with this incident taking place?
At the time or after? At the time, we both sort of popped up in the dark, as you would when something bangs on the wall from silence. But, you know, the logical question to ask, and I think this is where you're going, is what, you know, how did we not both sort of grab the flashlight and look out the window? Because you're woken from such a dead sleep, and you're not thinking. I wasn't like Bigfoot mindful at that point, so I was just, you know, you're just woken from it, like, what the hell, you know. You just think like, you know, a rock flew into the wall, or a meteorite hit, or you know, maybe a deer did run into it. You just don't care. Like, you kind of don't care. Right. You were sound asleep a second ago. You were completely snoring, and it was bam, and then it's just, oh, gee, dude, what the hell is that? Is that you? Okay, good night. You know, bam, your heads fall back to the pillow, and you fall back asleep. You don't want to get up and go running around looking at things.
Right. Now, you said you just had a kind of knowing of what caused it. Did you talk to her about it? Did you tell her?
I shouldn't imply that I had that knowing that night. I'm talking about as I ruminated on it, let's say, in the weeks ahead, and learned about, you know, like, I researched what could bang into a wall like that, and I researched the area, and I discovered the Whitehall monster, and I discovered that area that my father's house in is in the same county as Whitehall, and it's right near there. And I kind of put two and two and two together. And by that time, I think Finding Bigfoot was on the air. So I was starting to get more and more, you know, aware of like Bigfoot incidents and Bigfoot banging on cabins in the woods and, you know, things that you would see on that show. And it all started, you know, I started reading about that actually is a common Bigfoot behavior in rural areas, that they'll bang on the wall of a residence. So it all, you know, let's say in the weeks and months ahead, it got clear to me.
Did you two discuss it at all that night of what you thought it might be? Did it ever seem to cross her mind that it could be something, or wasn't until you brought it up that got her kind of reviewing that aspect?
Yeah, I would say it was when I brought it up. I mean,
how did she respond?
She doesn't immediately go to Bigfoot.
Honey, you were having your period. I think it was a Bigfoot looking to rut.
She responded with her lawyer's number. I'll admit this was my idea. But it took a little selling to get her over that hump. But yeah, she's not as far gone on, you know, as convinced as I am, but she's also not as wrapped up in this world as I am, and as studied as I am at this point in this world, because I think from around that point on, I really dove into the subject, and I started, you know, soaking up everything I could read and learn about this topic. And I've probably read like a couple hundred Bigfoot books at this point. And, you know, I became like, you know, like, it started looking like Masterpiece Theater of Bigfoot at my office. You know?
Why such a fascination? I mean, you sound like Richard Dreyfuss in Close Encounters, right? Once you have that first deal, it just opens up this obsession. Had you, you know, aside from seeing it on In Search Of and things like that, had it been a big part of your life, a fascination, or was it not until this moment that it really
I would say it was definitely something I was interested in. Fascination could be a little too strong a word, but I was pretty interested in it. You know, like I said, as a kid, I loved that show. I probably watched, you know, over the years into the 90s and beyond, some of the other shows, Monster Quest and the other shows I watched pretty religiously. So I was like definitely really interested in the topic enough that I'd DVR, you know, most shows on these topics. And so, yes, I was interested in the topic, but I wasn't, I think what I was trying to convey was that I was not as aware and as knowing of all things Bigfoot as I became after the incident, because I dove deeper into the studying. That's when I learned things like that them banging on the wall of the house is a common thing in a rural area. And, you know, started reading all the kind of books I started reading and you know, just got really threw myself into it, like you said, in a Richard Dreyfuss-y way.
The idea that you're, you know, maybe you were having a very close encounter with a Bigfoot, has that ever, you know, put you on the idea of, you know, you want to go back there and do this again? Or is your wife dead against that, that idea?
She's probably more okay with it. She's braver than me in general. I would have liked to have gone back there, actually, especially with, you know, with a lot of protection around me, like the protection of a 30-person TV crew and my assistant and stuff. But my father sold the house last year. So the house is actually no longer in the family as of like last year. And I don't think going back to that actual property is possible at this juncture.
All right. So did your father ever admit to any weird shenanigans going on?
Yes, okay. Yes. I'm glad you said this. I would have forgotten to mention it. He was a New York cop turned criminal lawyer. That's all another story. He had this really weird career where earlier in his career, he was a New York cop. Later in his career, he was a criminal lawyer. And there were actually cases later in his career as a lawyer where he was defending guys he had arrested.
Okay.
How do you explain to the judge, you know, Your Honor, I was wrong that time.
Yeah, that can maybe weigh against your credibility.
but anyway, he told me things over the years, actually. I think even before that incident, he had told me some things that I didn't at the time identify as Bigfoot incidents. And now, you know, jump forward to me reading and learning more deeply in the Richard Dreyfuss mold, the Bigfoot stuff that I was, you know, it's starting to get really deeply, reading into in 2007, 8, 9. And I start putting together some of the things he's told me over the years. And I'm realizing, wait a minute, that's a Bigfoot-ish incident on that property. An example of it is several times he found deer on the property with a broken back leg, just laying with their organs removed, with like very clean surgical kind of cuts and removals of things. Laying dead on the cobblestone, you know, pathways and roads that he's got dry cut into the forest there on the property, and it would be a broken leg, you know, there was an obvious broken rear leg, you know, that
sounds
led
like
them first.
Sounds like your Bigfoot is working for the Cuban mafia.
you guys hear about this stuff all day. I mean, that's a common Bigfoot execution method. I mean, this is Bigfoot behavior.
Sammy another, the squirrel another, says you still owe him some nuts and I'm here to collect.
Exactly. You know, and you know, another Bigfoot ish part of this story is that earlier in that evening, the evening of my wall, you know, banging incident, mm-hmm. my wife was standing on the deck of the house, which was like in the front of the house, the opposite side from where the bedrooms were. She was standing on the deck 10 o'clock at night or something, where we had a telescope and things like that. And she was just kind of standing there looking out the telescope and looking up at the stars and the, you know, clear blue sky upstate New York. And I remember watching her standing there from the living room, which was like a glass, you know, very glass heavy living room where you could see to the outside. I remember watching her, and she was out there about 10 minutes, and I saw her just seeming to kind of look around, like creeped out a little bit at the tree line, you know, 50 feet to her right and left. And then after a little while, she came in and said, something's freaking me out of here. I said, what are you talking about? And she's not like this usually. And I said, what are you talking about? And she said, I feel like something's looking at me. I feel like something's out here. She's not even mindful of that being a Bigfoot phenomenon. Now, at the time, I wasn't. But again, going forward into my reading, 2008, 2009, when I'm starting to really learn all the Bigfoot stuff, that's a common thing in the Bigfoot stories, you know, that the feeling that something's watching you.
Now, how well versed are you on the Beast of Whitehall and the history and stories regarding it?
Well, he came to visit me.
Okay, so you've sunk yourself into that. The reason I ask is I want to cover that in just a few seconds and get a little bit more insight for our listeners. All right, David Race, our guest here this afternoon, as we're talking about monsters. The Beast of Whitehall, that's the creature that's from that area. What can you tell us about the history on the Beast of Whitehall, David?
Well, the Beast of Whitehall is, you know, seems to be just a Bigfoot. You know, all these Bigfoots with the different names and the regional, you know, the regionality right. to it. But, you know, they're all Bigfoot. And that's another Bigfoot. Whitehall is about 45 minutes away from where my incident was, same county. Most of the really famous incidents happened in the 70s. In fact, the first episode of my new podcast, which is at monstrositypodcast.com.
And we're going to have a link up to that on today's show, too, folks. So you don't have to remember it right now, but it's right there in the description for today's episode. Just make sure you click on it and follow along. It's a great new podcast for you to get involved in and listen to.
Right. Couldn't have said it by myself. And the first episode of the new podcast is largely about the Beast of Whitehall, because our guest was Seth Breedlove, who is a filmmaker that you guys probably know, and he's done a lot of these paranormal movies, and the Beast of Whitehall is one of the movies he did, and that was the main thing I wanted to talk to him about that day, because I wanted to do a little bit of talk about my Cambridge, New York incident, which is, you know, basically the same neighborhood, and then hear, you know, some more insights about that area. So it's all kind of fresh in my mind, the stuff he was talking about on the first episode, which is that the majority of the really famous incidents happened in the 70s. And one of the reasons that the Beast of Whitehall incidents got such notoriety is that there seemed to be a lot of cops involved in the witnessing of these things. So anytime there's police witnesses in a UFO incident or a Bigfoot incident, it seems like it generates more heat or credibility.
And the kind of experiences people have, I mean, with this creature, has it spanned quite a long time, or has it only been over the last 20, 30 years?
It looks like there's been incidents with this thing, you know, way back. I'm not sure that Seth is aware of this, but in my research, there's incidents with the Beast of Whitehall going back into the 1700s and 1800s. I mean, there's incidents in that area that go way back, you know, probably at least Civil War, if not Revolutionary War period.
All right. Well, at the risk of sounding completely insane, which we've already crossed that line together, what do you think this is then? Are we dealing with one creature that has an infinite life source? Do you believe that they are interdimensional beings? Do you believe that it's a family of these creatures that are just so adept at avoiding human contact that they can live amongst us unseen most of the time?
Well, definitely not dealing with one creature. We're definitely dealing with families, you know, all over the world. As far as whether we're dealing with flesh and blood, you know, terrestrial creature, or whether we're dealing with, you know, alien species or something, that's unknown. I mean, this is a really unpopular viewpoint to take in the Bigfoot world. The Bigfoot purists don't want to even hear UFOs and aliens mentioned in the same sentence with Bigfoot, but I'm here to piss them off. In truth, I don't know the answer, and frankly, they don't know the answer. That's what makes their assertion that you can't ever intermingle those two things so silly. They don't know the answer. Matt Moneymaker doesn't know the answer to that question. He can insist all day that he does, but he doesn't. So the reality is that we could be dealing with an alien. We could be dealing with something that's able to pop in and out. We could be dealing with something that's put down on the ground for the evening by a spaceship, and, you know, a group of them go around doing their thing for a week or a day or a night or a month and then get picked back up and carried off. We have no idea. There is a leaked government document, the Blue Planet Project, that much of your audience probably knows about, that does describe in it various alien species that supposedly visit the planet. And one of those species is a dead ringer for Bigfoot. The description, the physical artist rendering in the manual. I mean, it's absolutely clearly being described as Bigfoot. I think the pages even say commonly referred to, you know, by humans as Bigfoot or Sasquatch, you know, this creature, blah, 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 blah. And so that manual would, you know, absolutely, if that's a real leaked government document, the government document is saying it's an alien species.
The idea of alien, you know, I'm, and you get to talk about this with a lot of people and the weirdness of all of this. Do you think that it's really alien in nature, or do you think that it came from some other place, or do you think we're the aliens on this planet and we're just, you know, we're just bumping into these beings, these creatures that are, you know, indigenous, and this is where they belong. We're the ones that are foreign.
I think about that a lot. I think about the possibility that, you know, we're all ants in an ant farm. We have no idea who we are. We all may be super miniaturized ants on the mantelpiece or shelf of some much, much larger being from some faraway planet. And this entire universe is, you know, we're ants in an ant farm. We don't even understand that. Who knows?
I vacillate on the idea on this. You know, Tim and I talk about this a lot on and off air regarding, where do we, you know, what's our place in this universe? Well, you know, are we the intruders here on this planet? Are these species and these beings that we're finding here? I'm starting to lean more to the idea that I don't know that we're necessarily being visited by aliens from outer space. I wonder if a lot of the craft and the things we see in these grays and mantis creatures and beings like that have always existed here. They're part of our planet. That's just their vehicles. They're advanced.
Well, another possibility that I think of more than that is I often think that it's a time travel issue, that they're from the future, or they're even us in the future. I think there's been evidence to that effect in UFO abductee cases, where UFO abductees have you know, talked about that's what was indicated to them, that we're actually you later.
And that's the aliens, not
right.
Bigfoot. You're not referring to them as
right.
possibly.
Right. Well, although, yeah, I'm off the Bigfoot thing. Yeah. In that statement, because I haven't heard of any Bigfoot abductions, but yeah, I'm referring more now to the grays.
We've discussed that. I wonder if even the grays are really, you know, are they really that, or is it us from the future coming back to understand history and
right.
be here witnessing it? Because look at, isn't it kind of interesting how many historic events there seems to be UFO sightings leading up to or right after the events? And it makes you wonder if they are there just to witness it from the future, because so much of what we know of history is just the winner's story, right? It's random information that's been passed along in some sense orally or in a written tradition, but has been re-examined or re-explained, you know, due to whoever's trying to decipher or interpret the story. And it would only make sense that we would go back in time to try to really get a handle on what happened.
Maybe they're changing and guiding certain outcomes. You know, at the 11th hour, when we're about to go to nuclear war, who knows if suddenly the grays come in like referees and go, okay, that's it, wrap it up, call it right here, play over.
Well, they've already shown us that they can, right? They've shut down missile silos. They've messed with some nuclear plants and missile areas. So obviously they have some kind of skin in the game. There's a lot of the nuclear vessels too that seem to be messed with it. I know my son was stationed aboard the Reagan, and he said that there was a few times that there was some really strange phenomena surrounding that ship that, you know, they were told just ignore it and move on and nothing for us to worry about.
Well, all the activity around nuclear weapons involving UFO sightings and shutdowns of missile tests and, you know, the things that you're talking about seem to me to potentially be a hint from them as to what their agenda is, what they're here to block, what they are capable of. You know, that they may be telegraphing, that may be their most sort of out in the public telegraphing to everybody that, you know, we're here to babysit.
And then the coordination too, have you got many stories from people that you've been talking to that seem to tie Bigfoot into alien culture, as though they seem, you know, there are a lot of UFO sightings near these Bigfoot hotspots?
Yeah, there's the deeper you read into this stuff, yes, of course. There's always loads of Bigfoot incidents that involve a UFO sighting. There are Bigfoot incidents that involve Bigfoot being seen coming or going from a UFO, marching right up the ramp back in or back out. That's not uncommon. So, you know, that's sort of, again, that's the, we're in the area now that drives the Bigfoot purists nuts. But, these witnesses are witnesses. These incidents have been recorded over time by many, many people, and they've involved these things. I can't change for a Bigfoot purist that there have been incidents by witnesses that they would have considered perfectly credible if he hadn't mentioned the UFO, mentioning the UFO.
Are there specific, obviously the Bigfoot is something that intrigues you, but are there other aspects of the paranormal that fascinate you as well? Or, you know, is it mostly the idea that cryptids and beasts walk amongst us?
It all fascinates me. I mean, Bigfoot may be my favorite. The whole Bigfoot thing is, kind of like the Beatles of paranormal for me. They're the best group. But the other stuff, I'm pretty well versed in UFOs. I think a UFO sighting about 3 or 4 years ago, my first one, which I'll tell you about in a second. And I'm fascinated by the ghost paranormal stuff, not dying to run into. See, the one difference between me and most of the people, in this lane is that the majority of the people in the paranormal world want to get out and get their hands dirty in it. They want to run into the woods and spend the night, looking for Bigfoot. They want to hide in a tree quietly and hope one comes walking by.
Not me.
Yeah. I mean, when I did my TV show, the TV pilot that you referred to in the beginning of this call, I actually had it in the contract that I'm not to be in the woods at night.
How did they respond to that?
Well, they ended up understanding that I wrote the construct of the show. I wrote, because I was executive producer, creator, and host of the show. So I wrote the whole structure. It was a reality show, and I wrote the whole structure in a way that kept me out of the woods and made it sort of part of the joke. That I'm sending my team into the woods for the evening to take care of this. And I'm speeding away in a car with the dust hitting them as the wheels spin out. Back to the Ritz-Carlton where I spend where A being a split screen and I'm in a hot tub with a drink and they're in the woods running for their lives.
See, that's my type of investigation. I think you and I are going to get along just well, David. That's perfect.
Yeah. So when I talk like this to real Bigfoot intensive people, they think I'm some kind of wimp and what's wrong with you? And we'll get you out there. You're not getting me out there. You'll get me out there if there's a limo, a helicopter, a Learjet, I'm not coming with you.
Must be something with guys named David. I just tell everybody I'm an avid indoorsman and I'm not a big fan of the out of doors, but yet here you are fascinated with one of the most outdoorsy of all aspects of the supernatural.
I love studying it from my living room.
Right. Yeah, it's kind of like Shark Week. We all love to watch Shark Week, but none of us want to actually get in the water with a shark.
Right, right. That's a great example. I mean, here you have all the Bigfoot investigators all want to get out there and meet this, I think, potentially dangerous and scary. If it's not dangerous, it's certainly a scary thing. I would want to be around some 9-foot, unknown creature in the dark of the woods, in Wisconsin somewhere. So that's scary. But you're right. You never hear of a guy going, that's it. A Shark Week inspired me. I want to dive in with these guys. Like no one dives in with the sharks,
Well, there are knuckleheads out there that want to go swimming with sharks and that's fine for them. That's just Darwin's way. So let them. I'm going to stay in my recliner and watch it from the safety of behind my TV screen.
Back to your original question, I've been getting more into the ghost stuff in the last couple years. I would say the ghost stuff lagged behind for me. I was Bigfoot, UFOs, sea monsters, Ogopogo, Champ, Loch Ness, all that stuff most of the time. And
let's do this, David. Let's take a break. We'll come back. I want to hear about your UFO encounter and your thoughts on the different aspects of the paranormal and ghosts and such when we return. But right now, folks, it's time to kick open the doors to the Dark Hives as we go deep for this week's Theater of the Mind.
My name is Jay Giuliano, and I believe in angels. I have a guardian angel. I've met him twice in my life, both times in life-threatening situations, and I am not ashamed to admit it. My wife, Rosanna, will tell you that I'm a skeptic on many subjects. I'm a bit of the yin to her yang when it comes to some things paranormal, but it's not for lack of belief in other things. I believe in God, and I believe that he sends his angels, and he sends them at the times that we need them most. The first time I met my guardian angel, I was just a kid. I was on a school trip to a water park, a Catholic school trip, mind you. I was a chubby kid, not at all a swimmer, but I felt the need to prove myself to my friends. You know, chubby kids really strive hard to look like that they are as athletic as their athletic friends. So I decided to brave the wave pool. I was scared, really scared. Nonetheless, I went out to the deep end, grabbed tightly onto my floaty, and awaited my fate. The loud horn blew and the machine came on. At first, there was just that churning of the water. I was nervous, but still composed at this point. And then the waves started to hit me. Splash, splash. While my buddies were having an absolute blast, I was literally freaking out inside. But out of pure embarrassment, I kept as low-key as I could. Splash, splash. I was getting pummeled. Next thing you know, I lost my flotation device. It was at that very moment that I started to panic. The wave pool was packed. There were kids all around me, laughing, whooping it up, having the time of their lives. Meanwhile, I felt like I was having the last time of mine, but nobody seemed to notice what was happening to me. I went under several times and fought to catch a breath. I coughed, I choked, I paddled. It was off or not. I was disoriented. I was pretty much convinced that I may not make it till the cycle was turned off. My arms were growing tired. The wave cycle seemed like hours, even though it had only been a couple of minutes. Suddenly, a strong arm wrapped around me. I felt myself literally being lifted and towed back to shore by a man, a bearded man with kind of long, dark hair. Now, let me pause for a second. I was a kid. The last thing I would have ever imagined was that this man could be my guardian angel. But listen to that description again. A man, a bearded man with kind of long, dark hair. Does this bring any images to mind? Because it did for me. And it comforted me, even at that age. Funny how that was the image that my guardian angel wanted to portray to me. Me, a Catholic school kid, but I digress. It was only a matter of seconds before he had literally carried me through the water. No small feat, I'd like to remind you. At this point, I'm a waterlogged chubby kid who can't swim. He sat me down at the edge of the pool. He looked at me and said, "You okay?" I answered with a nod. Then he said, "All right, well, I'm going to get out of here before the lifeguards see me." Now, let's pause again. Get out of here before the lifeguards see me? Now, I'm not going to say that didn't seem like a very weird thing to say, but again, I wasn't freaked out by it. But I did wonder what he meant. He had done nothing wrong. He had absolutely just saved my life. What could he have meant? Anyways, he smiled at me. Then he began to walk away, literally as a couple of my friends approached me, just sitting there, dazed and confused and soaking wet. They were like, "Jay, we lost you. How did you get back here?" I looked around to show them the man who had just brought me back to shore. He couldn't have been more than a few feet away at the time, but he wasn't. He was gone. Vanished like he had never been there. It made no sense. I didn't know what to think. I didn't know what to say. I sat there, hearing the splashes, the kids laughing and yelling, the music, the lifeguard whistles, and commands being yelled through microphones. But my hero, my savior of the day, he was gone. But I was a kid. I had a lot of other very important things to do that day at the water park, so that was that. The second time I met my guardian angel, he took a completely different form, the form of a firefighter. In my late teens, early 20s, I had a near-fatal bout with anaphylaxis. That's a severe allergic reaction. Mine was to antibiotics. I was taking them for a basic sinus/throat infection. I was still living at home with my folks at the time. It was late one night, about time for bed. I took a dose of the medication and I laid down to sleep. It was dead silent. I heard the clock ticking on the wall, crickets outside, just another night. But then suddenly, a few minutes later, I sat up. I had begun itching all over. I felt like I was itching on the inside, and I started to feel my throat and my face swell up. I could almost hear my heart beating in my head. Something was very wrong. I got up. I felt unbalanced. I was It was indescribable, a feeling like I'd never had before. I stumbled through my room, down the hallway, and made it to the bathroom mirror to see a distorted version of myself. Swelling up all over, I looked like I'd been in the bad end of a boxing match. I must have been making quite a racket, bumbling down the hallway and into the bathroom, because my dad heard me, and he got up to come and check on me. Now, that was odd, because it wasn't like folks don't just get up and go to the bathroom in the middle of the night, but there he was, almost immediately. I looked over at him. I could literally see the shock on his face as he looked at my swollen appearance. He asked me if I was okay. I could hardly put two words together, and that was it. I passed out. He called for my mother, which I could faintly hear through the ringing in my ears and the massive distortion in my brain. He and my mom got me back to my bed. I was in and out of consciousness, swelling badly and unable to breathe. Now, I could only hear the ringing and the heartbeat at this point. The clock was drowned out. The crickets were gone. The only other sounds I could hear were those of my parents telling me to stay with them. But it was almost like they were underwater or had pillows over their faces when they talked. The room was spinning, and it seemed like it was closing in on me. Now, we live very close to the firehouse in my town. They were there in minutes. If there were sirens, I didn't hear them. Suddenly, I just heard the voices of strange men all around me. My blood pressure had dropped severely, and my heart was racing faster than ever. I had moments left. I remember looking at my folks and somehow having the clarity to tell them, I don't want to die tonight. I looked around, and I saw firemen. They had the typical grayish, drab uniforms. They were on either side of my bed looking down on me. I was able to clearly see their faces and their outfits, even though it was all getting blurry and fading fast. But there was one fireman, a fireman that both my mom and I remember clearly to this day. Now, my dad has since passed, but we all talked about him for years after this. That fireman had red hair. He was dressed almost like an old-timey firefighter. Kind of big, loose-fitting pants, a white shirt, suspenders. He stood at the foot of the bed while the others were working on me and injecting me with epinephrine. He told my mom, "Everything's going to be okay, Mama." He stood by her, comforted her, and just watched. He had the most amazing presence. You couldn't deny it. And it's funny. Where he stood, looking back, he didn't really interact at all with the other firemen. He was just right there by my mom, looking down at me as if my family were the only ones in the room. "Everything's going to be okay, Mama." And it was. My vitals started leveling off. The swelling went down. It appeared that I would live to see another day. I was taken off to be supervised at the hospital for a while, so the firemen passed me on to the ambulance drivers. But this time, that was not that. My parents were so thankful. I was so thankful. We were all so thankful that my dad made a trip to the firehouse the next day to personally thank the firefighters, in particular, to bring a message of thanks from my mother to that one firefighter who had comforted her and told her everything would be okay. Much like Wave Pool Jesus, he kind of just disappeared when everything got back to normal again. Now I'm going to pause again real quick. Red hair, suspenders, old-timey fireman this time. Again, a very comforting vision. Somebody you feel like you can trust when they tell you everything's going to be okay. But not at all as blatantly spiritual looking as my hero at the wave pool. Much more just the appearance of your average, everyday nice guy. So, Dad headed to the firehouse. He thanked a couple of the firemen who were still on duty the next day. Then he described the fireman at the foot of the bed to the other firefighters. Where was he? You know, the one with the red hair, the suspenders? Now, I probably don't have to tell you, but they told my father that there was just not a man who fit that description at that firehouse. They all had a bit of a laugh about their comrade who had been grace under fire, calming a freaked out mom, watching her kid knocking on death's door, but they just didn't know who the heck my dad was talking about. Dad came back a bit shaken, a bit dumbfounded. He told my mom and I what the other firefighters had said. And that's when I knew. That's when I first truly believed that there are angels among us. One reason I wanted to share these stories with you is that I want to humanize the reasons that I feel people believe. It's not about organized religion. It's not always about being a part of a community of believers. It's often just about a deep personal faith. And that's probably the least harmful thing that anyone could have in their life. I hurt when I see people attack others on social media, television, etc. on the grounds of their faith. I actually do pray for them. I can't imagine the emptiness that they must feel not to only have nothing to believe in, but to feel the need to criticize and persecute those who do. So I reach out today to both believers and non-believers. We can find common ground. We can respect each other. We can all coexist and live productive, supportive lives. We simply need to take care of our own houses, focus on our own lives. We need to live and let live, but still be mindful enough to care for others, not to hate or to bully them. And that's one belief that I think we can all subscribe to.
Beyond the darkness.
Welcome back. This is the best in paranormal talk radio. This is Beyond the Darkness. I'm your host, Dave Schrader, along with me, my intrepid co-companion, Mr. Tim Dennis, and our guest today, David Race. He is the host of Monstrosity, a creepy and hilarious podcast created by him. He's a Los Angeles comedian and paranormal enthusiast, and in each episode, it features a comedian or celebrity chatting with David Race and a paranormal expert, and then the show kind of unfolds and changes from minute to minute, veering from terrifying tales to comedy gold. We have links to it on our site for today, monstrositypodcast.com. It's very easy to find and listen to, so check it out. That link is right on today's description of the program. All right, David, let's hear about your UFO encounter.
When I rack my brain, I always try to think, like, have I ever seen anything else that I would say is, you know, I could pretty confidently say is a UFO encounter prior to this thing? No, but this thing I'm pretty sure of. Driving in LA maybe 4 or 5 years ago, could have been, you know, somewhere in the last 3 to 5 years. I don't recall exactly when, but not last Tuesday. And I was driving. I remember exactly where I was driving eastbound on, I think, Victory Boulevard. If anyone who wants to Google map this along with me, it could be interesting to do this as I lead you through it, because you'll be able to actually street view this and watch what I'm watching. I was in the Van Nuys area, driving eastbound on Victory Boulevard at Sepulveda Boulevard. And I'm just, you know, driving and looking up ahead in the sky, and I can see, and I wasn't looking for this, it just became apparent that I can see small dots in the sky in the distance, due east, maybe about my 11 o'clock in front of me. Seemingly very high up, maybe a half dozen, 5 or 6, you know, small circular objects that were hovering at a great height over what would look to me, and if I would guess, they were probably over about Burbank. Again, I love the idea that somebody's, you know, street viewing this and watching the map unfold as I tell the story, because I think it, right, it would be cool to kind of, you can do it right with my eyes, you know. And so to my eyes, it would be that this was about my 11 o'clock straight ahead east, heading on Victory at Sepulveda. And they're in the skies, maybe about Burbank-ish. And they're just kind of at a great height, sitting still and then moving around each other. And sometimes, like, a random one would kind of zoom in on another one and kind of overlap with it. And then it would, you know, it would come out and two others would, you know, move a different direction, but they would generally just stay in the same, you know, quadrant, the same 11 o'clock quadrant, just kind of hovering and slowly changing positions and moving and reasserting their position in the group and moving around each other, all about the same size objects, all at the height they were, the distance they were, they all looked very small. They were not very, very, very easy to see. You know, a casual, you know, not looking for it. That's not, if you hadn't noticed it like I had, you may not have noticed it at all. You would have had to notice it and then be like, what's that? And stare in at it and then start observing how strangely these objects are acting and realize you're looking at something that seems to be UFOs. This was broad daylight too. This was in the middle of the afternoon. This was not nighttime.
Are you noticing, is anybody else seeing and witnessing this as well?
I don't recall seeing anyone else pulling over or pointing up at the sky. I do remember that I pulled over in a parking lot on Sepulveda. I don't remember if there was a paint store or something like that. You know, well, some type of store, like a home supply store, a paint store or something. I remember pulling over in a parking lot and, you know, facing my car due east on Sepulveda, just looking up at this for 10 minutes. Even called my wife and said, there's this crazy thing. Are you outside? Can you take a look up in the sky? She couldn't see it from where she was, but she was much further west of me, so I wouldn't necessarily think she could see it from there. And then I decided I need to keep heading where I'm headed. I think I was headed to Burbank. So I just continued driving east and, you know, frantically kind of trying to keep my eyes on it and maybe get a better position on exactly at what point I'm under it directly, so I could say, okay, it's right over Sherman Oaks, or it's right over Studio City, or wherever it was going to turn out to be exactly. And so I was kind of trying to keep my eyes on it as I drove east, and I was able to for a little while, but then I don't know if they vanished or I somehow lost it. It just, at some point, you know, let's say before Studio City, I don't remember seeing it anymore. And again, I mentioned all these geographic points for a reason, because I love the guy who's street viewing this along with me.
Yeah, so they can track along and see just what kind of stuff you were doing. Now, did you have any missing time at all during any of this?
No, thank God. No missing time. I definitely also like Bigfoot. I'm not eager to meet the aliens.
The reason I ask is, you know, there are some belief that if you see an alien or you've seen a UFO, that means there's a good chance that you've been abducted.
Yeah, I hope that's not true.
Look at you.
I'm hoping that I'm thinking these guys were at a great enough distance. They were involved with somebody else.
Okay.
I mean, in Burbank.
Have you ever considered going in and getting a regression just to see?
No, you're the first guy to put this in my head, and it's ruining my day. if anything happened that day, if anyone was abducted that day, again, this was over Burbank. This was about, you know, 5 years ago. Jay Leno was probably the guy they were after, not me.
I doubt it was Leno. You should get it checked. You know, the other thing to consider is that might not have been Bigfoot outside your cabin. What if you and your wife had been abducted and that was just you being returned?
Yeah, all terrifying. Enough to make me leave the business.
There you go. I'm just trying to see, Tim, we're getting rid of another podcast.
Enough to make me leave any business.
We just plant enough dark seeds in the minds of these guys. Because, you know, the more you talk about it, David, the more they're attracted to you because they know you're open to it. So the more you do this in your podcast, the better the chances are that you will have a full-on Bigfoot and alien anal probing. Just fair warning.
You know, actually, people tell me that this, what you just said, that's particularly true in the ghost world, that if you are open to the ghost thing, if you watch too much stuff about ghosts, if you're too available to the whole ghost thing, that you're inviting that sort of presence into your world. Let me be very clear with the ghosts. I also don't want to meet you. There's no entity that I discuss that I want to meet. I'm perfectly happy to discuss them. I'm fascinated by them, and I can be very entertaining about them, but I have no desire to meet any of them.
Oh, come on. Got to get out and experience that side.
No,
you don't.
I handle all this stuff from a distance, and that's how it's
right.
That's how it's set.
Not real hands-on. I
no,
like that.
No, not at all.
You're the Barney Fife of the paranormal world.
Yes, exactly. In fact, you don't realize how incredibly well-timed that reference was. I'm not going to give it away, but just listen to the next episode of the podcast. Episode two has a tie-in to something you just said.
All right. Very cool. We will we'll definitely check that out. Now, talk to me about how your show launched into a TV program. How did that go for you? And tell us a little bit about the program. When is it going to air? Where is it going to air? What can we find?
Well, it launched into, it was the old podcast. The original podcast is the one that spun into a TV show. Comedians Talking About Bigfoot was the old podcast. And comedians talking about Bigfoot was about 3 years ago, something like that, maybe four. It was born, the idea of the podcast was born out of my obvious obsession with this topic. And I had been having, you know, a lot of comics come up to me and tell me you should be doing a podcast because I had a background in radio. I'd been a disc jockey in New York and Philadelphia before I was a comedian. And every comedian in L.A. was, you know, starting to have a podcast at that point. But they were all doing, you know, the Tom Johnson podcast, you know, the Mike Jones podcast. They were very generic kind of podcasts. And none of it appealed to me. And then one afternoon I just thought, wait a minute, what if I do a podcast that's like extremely, you know, centered on my Bigfoot thing? What if it's, you know, comedians talking about Bigfoot? I'll host it, put a comedian in the room or two, put a Bigfoot guy from Finding Bigfoot. We had Bobo on one episode, and, you know, put those guys on the phone and discuss Bigfoot in the serious, reverential way that I want to, as a guy who's into it and believes it and feels he had stuff happen. But inevitably, there would be jokes. You know, one of the ways I like to view this is I'm the Bill Maher of Bigfoot. I know how to A, B between serious, reverential discussion of this topic and still work in the jokes. You know, regardless of what one thinks of Bill Maher politically, I have no concern with where you or your audience stand on Bill Maher as a political viewpoint guy. But we'll all agree that for sure the guy does know how to A, B between, you know, taking a serious position, whatever it is, and then working a joke in, you know, doing new rules or whatever comedy bit he's doing. He's able to sort of go back and forth between those two different things in the same show very effectively. And the podcast community talking about Bigfoot, you know, was doing something similar with Bigfoot at the center of it instead of politics. So I had a bunch of TV companies approach me wanting to do things with it pretty quickly. And I was only doing one episode a month, which, by the way, this new podcast, same thing, one episode a month. And so by the time I was into maybe the fifth episode or so, I already had a handful of meetings and a good amount of approaches, people who wanted to do things. And I selected a particular company that I thought would be a good fit. And we went out and did a reality version, which may not have been exactly the right construct for it. I gave you a little idea earlier what the construct was. And we shot for a week. We shot an entire, you know, week-long pilot, and not just a sizzle reel in Hollywood speak. Hollywood speak, normally they would just shoot like a couple minutes, you know, kind of preview, almost like a trailer of a TV show. And they would shoot it on a very low budget, you know, maybe shoot it around L.A., something like that. Might have been shot in the woods of L.A. just to make it look like it's Oregon or something. And they just basically want a greatest hits reel for 2 minutes and give you a preview of what the whole show could look like without investing a lot of money. That's not what we did. This company, we went and shot a full-blown week, 7 days. You know, we flew out of state and shot. And the show just didn't, it didn't end up coming together quite as I think we all would have wanted. It was heavier on the documentary side than I think it could have or should have been. It needed more of the comedy element that I was bringing to it, less of the, you know, in search of element. So it became difficult to sell after a couple, you know, maybe two meetings. It became clear that I don't think it's going to sell in its current configuration, and we sort of let it drop. So the answer is you're not going to see it. And
well, not with that attitude, Mister.
No, I mean this isn't me like, you know, kicking anybody, but I don't think it's ever going to be seen. It was, you know, we shot it a couple years ago, and I don't think that show, you know, came out in the way that I would have wanted it to. So I don't think it'll be
seen. You guys might want to revisit just as a little inside trader talk here. Let me mention the Travel Channel seems to be looking at and picking up a lot of paranormal programming right now. So you might want to revisit that. You might find that they're open to new ideas.
I've heard that from various people in my show business arena. I think I can do, I mean, I have a lot of show concepts sitting here that I can do. There's ways to do the thing I'm doing now, Monstrosity, you know, as a television thing really well. So, I didn't say you'll never see me on TV. What I said is that particular show, I think is probably not going to happen. The one that was already shot.
So what you're saying is we can't get you out on a ghost hunt with us when we come to LA.
No, No, but see, I like. There's a great example. I have a really incredible ghost reality show written. Really great. I mean, it's totally different than any you've ever seen before. You know, if Travel Channel wants to come knocking, I'll talk to them about it.
Well, maybe you should shake their cage. That's how it works nowadays in the TV world.
Yeah, I mean, sure, but you'd be surprised. at least my past experience is that they hear my podcast and they come looking for me. So let's see what they do this time.
Wow, fancy. How come we don't get that happening, Tim? We don't get Spielberg's not knocking on our door for movies and TVs. We talk about this shit for 12 years.
Yeah.
Son of a bitch.
I don't know.
That's it. We're going into comedy. Obviously, that's the only way to get.
Yeah, you might need to have a comedian. You might need to have a comedian like me hanging around all the time.
All right. That
might be the missing ingredient.
All right, well, join us next week when we begin the new show with Dave, Tim, and Dave. And David Race, our guest, he is the host of Monstrosity, the podcast. You can find it out at monstrositypodcast.com. Is your old show still available somewhere, David?
Yeah, the old show is still online at comedianstalkingaboutbigfoot.com.
Comedianstalkingaboutbigfoot.com. All right, so we'll put that link up as well.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I'm perfectly happy for people to listen to the old show, but I'd rather people, you know, find the new one because the new one is where it's at now. But the old one, yeah, the first episode of the old one, actually, I really go into detail for an hour. I think I do the whole story that I did for you about what happened upstate New York with my wife and the, you know, it was relatively more recent at that point. So I might even have had a slightly better memory of all the details. And I definitely, in the first episode of that show, I talk all about that.
Fantastic. So talk to us a little bit about your thoughts on ghosts and that aspect of the paranormal, if you would.
Yeah, I'm getting way more interested in that in the last couple of years than I ever had before. I would say that ghosts were kind of off the grid for me for most of the time that I've been interested in these topics. So I was intensively reading and studying the Bigfoot stuff the last batch of years. And even when I was a kid watching all the TV shows, like you know, the old Nimoy in Search of and things like that, I didn't like the ghost stuff. The ghost stuff I found too scary, and I just wasn't even that interested in it. But in the last couple of years, I'm getting my head around the ghost stuff more. I'm finding the ghost television shows more interesting, particularly Ghost Adventures. I love that show. Really love that show. That show stands out for me for some reason. There's something just done right. That whole, you know, Zach Baggins and that gang just do that show right. So I watch that pretty religiously, and
I would agree with you, but that would seem self-gratifying as I worked for the show for 3 years, helping find locations, and I've appeared on 7 episodes. But yeah, I agree with you. It's a pretty damn good show.
Yeah, they do something they do right about, and there's something, you know, they get it right,
and they have fun with it, which I think is important too.
Right. So I really enjoy that. I watch that a lot. Read, you know, about ghost incidents, you know, when I see something that crosses my mind, that's interesting to me. But I wouldn't say I read about that stuff as much as I do the Bigfoot topic or whatever. That just grabs me more. But as far as ghost incidents, I've only had one thing happen that even is possibly in that world, although it's relatively recent. I'm glad to say I only had one thing because, like I said, I don't like the idea of any of these things actually being, you know, in my living room. The incident I had was a couple years ago, my grandmother, who was probably the closest person to me my whole life. She lived back east on Long Island, and I'm living in Los Angeles, and I hadn't seen her in a while. I mean, I would speak to her all the time, but she was, you know, into her 90s and with a home health aide and was not at all, didn't have all her wits about her for the last batch of years. And I knew her health was, you know, she wasn't terminally ill, but I knew, you know, she's into her 90s and, you know, had been in the hospital a few times with different little things and something could happen at any moment. And, but I did not know that she had died that particular afternoon. So on the particular afternoon that I didn't know yet that she had died, my brother hadn't yet informed me. He informed me, let's say, a few hours later. My wife and I were pulling out of our garage here in California, and she noticed a bird that was following me, basically from the garage to the to the car, and then it was kind of flying along, or the bird was flying along, he or she flying along near my window, kind of like behaving weirdly for a bird, you know, flying kind of near my window, and the car window staring at me, and the windshield staring at me in the side window. She goes, "This bird is acting very strange. Like, you ever see a bird like kind of stay around a human like this?" I said, "It is strange." We drove away, and then we came back from, you know, a couple of errands, maybe 20 minutes later, half hour later, and this bird is back, flying all around me, follows me basically up the walkway and, you know, out of the car and up the walkway. Just very weird. And shortly after that, I get a call and an email from my brother that my grandmother died this afternoon, that she died a few hours ago. And the reason this is interesting, and the reason I'll tie this all together, the way I'll tie it all together, my grandmother's number one obsession in life, possibly besides me, I was her favorite person in the world, but other than me, I'd say her other obsession in life was birds. And she always, always had two parakeets at all times. If one died, she'd get another one immediately. And they were loose in the house, flying all around her all the time. So if you walked into her house, it was totally routine for a parakeet to land on your head when you walked in. And it was like that for the entire time I knew her, my whole life. And when she died, the day she died, and I didn't even know she was dead yet, there was a bird in California following me around.
That's really beautiful. What a cool story, and a good way to end on this as well. David, thank you so much for joining us, and we wish you a lot of success with the kickoff of your new program, Monstrosity Podcast. You can find it again at monstrositypodcast.com. And keep us in mind, as stories progress and you get weirder stories and want to join back up with us, we'd love to visit with you and hear more of what's going on in your world.
Great. Thanks. Enjoyed it.
It's been a pleasure. Thank you all for tuning in and checking it out. Hey, Tim, before we sign off for the day, we do have another special guest joining us right now. Do you know that we have been responsible for, I think, supplying more special guests to paranormal shows over the 12 years we've been on than I think any other paranormal radio show out there? And it just continues. And I think that's why so many of these production companies reach out to me. I got the chance to go out earlier this year and film for a TV show on haunted hospitals. And I talked to you about that, right?
Yep.
As a matter of fact, we shared a version of that story on our Theater of the Mind in the past. But they shot a program with me. And actually, the gentleman we're about to speak with got a lot deeper into my story than I had ever shared before. And I got quite emotional during it. So I'm interested to see how this episode turns out when it does come out. But they've got a new program that they're working on, and they're looking for you, our listeners, that are interested in sharing your stories. Joining us now, Tobin Long. Tobin, thank you for being here.
Dave, thanks for having me. You know, once again, always great to talk to you as well. And thanks again for sharing your story on haunted hospitals.
Great. And we're going to keep people updated when that show is going to break and how they can catch up with it. As soon as that comes out, we'll have you back on the show and alert people. But right now, you've got a new project in the works. Why don't you tell us about it?
Yeah. So I have the pleasure of working on a new program that is continuing our investigation of paranormal events as it relate to people with certain jobs that I think the lack of better term are people that whose jobs usually works with a mandate of science. And in this case, we're working with first responders and looking at paranormal experiences that they might have had while attending to life and death situations. Now, we don't really have a title for the show yet, but we're tentatively calling it Paranormal 911, as in, you know, calling for help.
Right.
But in this case, when there is help, there's also a paranormal event attached to it.
And what exactly are you looking for right now, and how can we help you out?
Well, what we're doing is we have a bit of a challenge because what we know about first responders is that they're usually very involved in the moment, in the action of the task at hand. And noticing anything that goes beyond an everyday strange event is a bit fleeting because, you know, you can imagine they're trying to save people's lives in a lot of these situations. And so when paranormal activity does occur, or something that we can describe as the unexplained, it when it does happen, it's very obvious to them, but they're not looking for it. They're always rationalizing the experiences away, trying to figure out, you know, what happened, trying to use their very logical scientific minds, right? So for us, we're trying to sift through just the normal everyday weirdness that might occur, based on, physics, a car crash that doesn't seem like it could possibly have happened. But we're disregarding those. We're looking for those moments that scare them because they can't actually find a logical explanation for what they have just witnessed. If I can share a quick story for you.
Please, like, yes.
It's very common, for 911 dispatchers and police to attend non-response calls from a home. And a non-response call is when a call goes to a 911 center, the operator on the other end receives the call, but there's no response behind it. So in the world of the EMTs, paramedics, and firefighters, when they get these non-response calls, their immediate action is to go do a welfare check on the caller, especially if it's a landline, it's easy to pinpoint. And sometimes when they arrive there, maybe that residence that they were supposed to go to, that home, is no longer even in existence. It's a phantom call. Other times they'll find a house that's just, it's abandoned, but yet there's no phone lines attached to it. Other times you get people that are, they've never called, but someone or something has called from their home phone, has called into 911. So it happens. And we find that really interesting when you have these calls, but they're common enough. So we're looking for things like that, but bigger. So where a first responder attends a call, it doesn't have to be a non-response call, any type of call. And it, on the surface, it just appears to be a normal emergency situation, but something extraordinary or paranormal happens to them. And we are finding stories. They're just a little bit harder to find.
All right. Well, how do people reach out to you if they want to share their stories and they've been in that position?
Sure. So if people want to get in touch with us, the first thing we're looking for are, the amazing stories that where the person experiencing that story, there's a bit of fear to it because it is unexplained. We're not looking for answers. We just want to know their first hand experience. If you were to tell your best friend, this weird thing happened to me this one time, we'd love to hear that. And it can take place at any time, any place in the world. We're not picky where we're sourcing the stories from. We have stories from the UK. We have stories from Australia, many stories from the United States, a few from Canada. So we're looking for more. People can email me. It's probably the quickest way to get in touch with me. And I can give you my email. And do you want me to spell it out or do you just want me to?
Yeah, please go ahead and give it out and spell it out so our listeners know how to contact you.
Okay. So it's T, as in Tobin, Long, L-O-N-G, at Bristow Global Media. And Bristow is B-R-I-S-T-O-W, Global, G-L-O-B-A-L, Media, M-E-D-I-A.com. And they can use that to get in touch with me. It's the quickest way. Or, again, Dave, if you're up for it, they can email you. And if you could, forward emails, that works for us as well.
Sure. Just shoot them to me, dave@darknessradio.com, and I'll forward them over to Tobin so that they've got them. dave@darknessradio.com, and just put on there, what was the name of the show you wanted to call it? Paranormal 911?
Yeah, Attention Paranormal 911.
Yeah, if you just put Paranormal 911 in the line for me, it'll make it easier, and I'll know to forward that on. But I'd love to hear the stories, so tell me the stories, and I'll shoot them over to Tobin and make sure he's got them, and they can possibly contact you. Include your phone number and a backup number as well, and the best emails to reach you through so that they have a couple of different ways to communicate with you. Tobin, good luck in the future with the new program, and let us know what else we can do to help you with that and any other projects that you get going.
For sure. And like I said, I'd love to come back when there's a chance to tell you about the air date for haunted hospitals, and hopefully this new show will be following shortly thereafter once we get enough stories.
Fantastic. So I look
that's
forward
the challenge.
To it. Thank you very much for joining us. You heard it, folks. If you want your chance to tell your stories, just keep listening to Beyond the Darkness. We will continue to deliver for you options like this so that you can actually get out there and share your tales. You never know when your story might be used on one of these programs. Remember, we're just a couple weeks away from the big Michigan Paracon in Sault Ste. Marie, Michigan, and we would love for you to join us. Tim and I will be out there doing a presentation, hanging out together, and it's going to be a blast. The tickets are on sale. You can still get out there and be a part of it by visiting darknessevents.com or darknessradio.com and click on the events tab, and you'll see all the information regarding the upcoming programs that we're going to be a part of all around the United States and around the world. So please go check that out, educate yourself, and join us. And don't forget, if you subscribe right now to True Crime Tuesday, and you do it between now and December 31st, any new subscribers and our past subscribers that are still subscribed through December 31st, we will be doing a drawing on January 1st for $500 to be given away to one lucky guest. Tim, that equates to about 10 years of free subscriptions if they wanted to just reapply it directly back to True Crime Tuesday podcast.
Wow.
10 years of programming.
10 years.
That's a pretty damn good deal.
Yeah, it is.
So you subscribe for $4.99 a month. You're going to get delivered the best in True Crime Talk Radio. Four times a month, brand new episodes come out. And you can listen to them anytime once they're released. And it gives you access to all of our old archives and some other special features. Plus, we're going to be adding some new features to the program. So subscribe now at True Crime Tuesday. You can find that banner at darknessradio.com. Click on the banner and subscribe immediately. And again, everybody that's subscribed between now and through December 31st is automatically put in for the drawing on January 1st when we draw $500 as a way to thank you for supporting us and being a part of our world. So that's it for now. Remember, the week doesn't end here. Just because Beyond the Darkness won't be back again until next weekend, it doesn't mean that we're gone forever. You can hear me Monday through Friday on Midnight in the Desert, midnightinthedesert.com for more information and ways to subscribe. And Tim's going to be joining in and being a regular part of the show as a fill-in host and covering for me when I'm out of town, especially in the month of September when I'm off in Romania. Tim will be taking over the lion's share of the show and filling in for me. So thank you for that, Tim. People can find information at midnightinthedesert.com. That's midnightinthedesert.com for all of those updates. Unless you have anything else to share, Tim, I think that's it for today.
I don't think I have anything.
Well, fine. Be that way. That's it then.
Oh, you know what?
Take care.
You know what? I do have something.
What?
I just want to remind people, Dave, for those people who are in the immediate Midwest, IWI is at the 1029 bar August 19th. It's a Sunday. It's a week from this. It's a week from today at 1 o'clock, Northeast Minneapolis. It's a spot show. So it's that location only for that day. So 1029 show, it's the one time we do it, the one time a year in August. I'm looking forward to it. It's under a tent, Dave, outside, lots of beer, lots of camaraderie. It is an all-ages show, so you can bring the kids down, and the Smack Shack's going to be there, so we'll have lobster roll sandwiches.
Wow. There you go. Sign me up.
Yeah.
Very cool.
Yeah, so come on down. 1029 bar, it's in the back, so we'll be in the back under the tent. And the regular admission applies there. So it's a 1 o'clock start over there at 1029 bar before your SummerSlam activities on Sunday, August 19th. There you go.
All right, that's it for Beyond the Darkness.
This time of year, most of us are checking off our holiday gift lists. But identity thieves have lists too, and your personal information might be on them. Protect your identity with LifeLock. LifeLock monitors millions of data points every second and alerts you to threats you could miss. If your identity is stolen, LifeLock will fix it, guaranteed, or your money back. Make this season about joy, not identity theft, with LifeLock. Save up to 40% your first year at LifeLock.com/iHeart. Terms apply.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's chumbacasino.com.
Plus, terms and conditions apply. At CVS, it matters that we're not just in your community, but that we're part of it.
it matters that we're here for you when you need us, day or night. And we want everyone to feel welcomed and rewarded. It matters that CVS is here to fill your prescriptions and here to fill your craving for a tasty and, yeah, healthy snack. At CVS, we're proud to serve your community because we believe where you get your medicine matters. So visit us at CVS.com or just come by our store. We can't wait to meet you. Store hours vary by location.